There is something going on. This is Mark Levine. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop right here on WEACT Radio. If you want to call in, please do so. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Or you can dial locally. Just dial 202-889-9792. Love to hear from our local listeners right here at WEACT Radio, Washington, D.C.'s only commercial progressive station. I want to do some local news that, well, it's really national news. Because both Virginia and Maryland are following trends that are national trends. In Maryland's case, I'm very proud of the Maryland House of Representatives, the Maryland Assembly, is what they call the General Assembly, which just by a one-vote margin said that gay people in Maryland will have the same freedom to marry as straight people. Now, you would think this was a pretty easy issue. After all, the 14th Amendment to the Constitution guarantees every American equal protection under the laws. We've talked about the 14th Amendment before, which talks about it protects any persons born or naturalized in the United States. Anyone born or naturalized in the United States is a citizen of the United States. By the way, that's not a corporation, because corporations aren't born in the United States. They're not naturalized. They don't become citizens of the United States. But it's very clear that no state, this is the 14th Amendment now to the Constitution, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. So, is marriage a privilege of a citizen of the United States? I think it's fair to say it is. Marriage has always been allowed in every state of the United States, and it confers a lot of great privileges. Not just being able to visit your loved one as they're dying in a hospital, but parental rights over children. You get cheaper tax. You pay less taxes. You have a spousal privilege if you testify. There, you can keep your spouse's secrets, and you don't have to testify against them in a court case. If you die and you don't leave a will, the money goes to your spouse. There's a lot of things that are involved with that. Clearly, it's a privilege of a citizen of the United States. And since no state can deny equal protection under the laws, how is it that 42 states say that straight people have privileges that gay people don't have? Straight people have the right to marry, gay people don't have that right. Straight couples can marry, gay couples cannot. How do they do that? Well, the answer is they don't. And the Ninth Amendment, the Ninth Circuit Court in California, in fact, just recently struck down California's Proposition 8 on the grounds that gay people have the same equal protection under the laws that straight people have. It's really not that hard to understand. It's the same laws that banned, that ended the ban on interracial marriage. Equal protection under the law. Remember, some 12 or 13 states banned blacks and whites from marrying in 1967 when Loving v. Virginia came to the United States Supreme Court, and they said, you know what? You can't do that. They said, well, we're not stopping marriage. Whites can marry whites and blacks can marry blacks. That's like saying, well, gay people can marry straight people. How many preachers want their daughters to marry a gay man? How many preachers want their sons to marry a lesbian woman? Those marriages are not likely to last. But that was an argument that the court laughed off, to say that whites can marry whites and blacks can marry blacks. No, you get to marry the person of your choice. Consenting adults can get married that are not related by blood. So why can't gay people have those same rights? Well, clearly they can, and one day I think the courts will uphold it. In the meantime, it's going in a state-by-state battle. Washington State has become the latest state to allow gay couples to marry, the seventh state, and Maryland is likely to become the eighth. The Maryland Senate is likely to pass the bill. Governor O'Malley has done a terrific job this time to push it through, and then there will be a referendum. So you're going to hear me talking a lot to Maryland voters. It's kind of sad to do that. It's kind of, I don't know, off-putting to beg for equality. I can imagine black people getting on the radio in the 1960s saying, please, sir, please, Mr. White Man, will you let me vote too? Please, please, can I have a job too? What can I say? It's demoralizing to have to beg for your rights and freedoms that you're guaranteed under the Constitution. And I'm sure many blacks in the 60s hated having to demand equal rights when that's something that just should go without saying. And many gay people don't like to do that either. But unfortunately, it's necessary. Unfortunately, the United States Supreme Court does not obey the Constitution. We learned that back when they chose Bush to be president over the guy that Americans elected, Al Gore, who was the choice not only of the majority of people in the United States, but the majority of people of Florida as well. Thus, he should have won their electoral votes. Because the United States Supreme Court is not following the Constitution, we've got to go state by state. And yes, gay people have to beg their straight neighbors to treat them equally. It shouldn't have to happen, right? Jews shouldn't have had to argue in Germany that they should have the same rights as Christians under Nuremberg laws. Blacks shouldn't have to argue in Alabama, Mississippi that they should have the same rights as whites. Women shouldn't have had to argue in 1920 that they should have the same right to vote as men. You shouldn't have to, but you do. And this is the last great, well, I won't say it's the last great injustice, because poor people, let's face it, poor people, there's still a tremendous injustice and inequality too. You get equal justice under the law if you're rich, but if you're poor, you might just get sent to the chair. We did a very powerful radio story a little while ago. I'll play it for you sometime on the Inside Scoop about a man, Kirk Bloodsworth, who was on death row even though he was completely innocent. He was put in trial for 8 years, all because he was too poor to afford a good lawyer. So there's still injustice against poor people. But you can change from poor to rich or poor to middle class. It's tough, but it can be done. We're trying to reclaim the American dream here on the Inside Scoop. But from woman to man, that's a lot harder. Black to white, virtually impossible. Gay to straight, also virtually impossible. And this idea that some Americans want to keep gay people as second-class citizens has no more validity than the people who wanted to keep black people as second-class citizens. And I guess one of the things I find that's really hard is when racial equality is pitted against equality based on sexual orientation. I know that offends some blacks because it suggested somehow that the equality for blacks is somehow something to be debated. I don't think it's something to be debated. I think it's obvious that blacks and whites are human beings with equal rights under the law. I also think it's obvious that men and women are human beings with equal rights under the law. I also think it's obvious that gay and straight people are human beings, all with equal rights under the law. And I do think it's sad that some of the opposition to gay rights, to freedom, to equality under the law, to the freedom to marry, came from leaders in the African-American community in Prince George's County in Maryland. And if you're listening to my voice and you disagree with me, I hope you'll call in and challenge me. Just dial 202-889-9792, 202-889-9792, or 888-488-MARK. I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to know your reason. Because I know that your church may say that it's not good. There are many, many churches that, frankly, did not want interracial marriages. Many churches and synagogues and mosques to this day do not allow interreligious marriages. And as far as I'm concerned, the First Amendment, I obey the Constitution, the churches can marry whomever they please. They can say, we will only marry straight people. They can say, we'll only marry Catholics, or we'll only marry Mormons. They can do that. They're churches. They are private institutions. As long as they don't get government funding, they can discriminate as much as they want. But this is the state. This is the state of Maryland. And it's doing the right thing. When we come back, I want to talk about a different state, a state across the river, my home state, the state of Virginia, that's doing exactly the wrong thing. Virginia is doing its best to prohibit people from voting. Yes, you heard it right. Not just people, but specifically to prohibit black people and poor people and students from voting. Why would they try to prevent black people and poor people and students from voting? Well, the answer is obvious. They vote for Democrats. I'll give you a story when we come back. Again, if you want to call in, 202-889-9792, 202-889-9792, or toll-free 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, right here on We Act Radio, WPWC 1480 AM. If you want to dial in, it's 202-889-9792, 202-889-9792, or call toll-free 888-488-MARK, 888-488-MARK. So Maryland is doing the right thing. It's tough, but they're starting to do the right thing with regard to freedom to marry. My home state, Virginia, across the Potomac, is doing the wrong thing. They're doing their best to make it difficult for people to vote. A famous person once said, "The people who cast the votes don't decide elections. The people who count the votes do." The person who said that? Joseph Stalin. And Republicans in the House, in the Assembly, are trying their best to keep people from counting the votes. Looks like we do have a caller on the line. Let me get to that caller, and I'll get back to my argument in just a second. Welcome to We Act Radio. You're on the air.
I'm on the air?
Yes, you are. Welcome.
I know this is kind of off topic, but the media wasn't really talking about it. I think in Florida, they're lowering the wages for, waiters, and from, $5 to, $2.
Really? I wasn't aware of that. But, I've been following the national news and local news in Virginia and Maryland, but I can't say that I follow that in Florida. So what, they're cutting the minimum wage for waiters down there?
Yeah, the wages are $4.65, and they're lowering it to $2.
I guess they think the tips will cover it, but there still seems to be there's got to be a minimum wage even for waiters down in Florida. That's interesting. How do you know about this? Are you from Florida?
Yeah, I'm from Sarasota, but it was on Twitter. A few people were mentioning it, and also there was another thing on Truth Out, and the Florida legislature is also they want to keep local governments from enforcing wage laws.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want anyone to enforce any wages at all, at the local level.
Well, a lot of that, Florida has a new governor, as you know, Rick Scott, who a Tea Party guy who is roundly hated in Florida. I know that even moderates, independents, don't like him. But that's what happens when a Tea Party candidate takes office. The guy in Wisconsin, Scott Walker, got a lot more attention than Rick Scott did in Florida. But he's equally bad, and I'm really glad you brought it to our attention. Can I get your first name?
I'm Victor.
Hi, Victor. Let me just ask you, I'm curious. You listen to We Act Radio right now, 1480 AM?
Yeah.
How'd you find us?
I've been hearing about We Act Radio for a while now,
Good.
Cliff Schechter was going on.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're listening. Are you right here in D.C.?
No, I just...
Listening to the stream?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I'll tell you, we have listeners from all over the United States, even all over the globe. I've had callers from Pennsylvania, from New Hampshire, from all over. So you're down in Florida then?
Yeah.
No, I appreciate you bringing it to our national attention. One of the nice things about We Act Radio is we are in shouting distance of the Capitol. People can, every single member of Congress can hear our voice. All they have to do is tune in, and so at least your Florida representatives will hear it. Of course, to deal with Florida, what you really have to do is talk to your representatives in Tallahassee. Florida is one of the most gerrymandered states in the United States. It's a well-known purple state, as you know. It's one that can go for the Democrats or the Republicans, as was made obvious in the Bush and Gore decision. But your congressional representation is more than three-quarters Republican, and that's because what they do is they gerrymander the districts. They would put all blacks in Florida in the same district, like Alcee Hastings' district in Florida, grabs a black neighborhood, then goes out to the Atlantic Ocean for a couple hundred miles, goes back in, grabs another black neighborhood. It's horribly gerrymandered, and that's why Florida has 10 more Republicans than it should have, because the population is fairly split down there. So I hope you can, down in Florida, work hard to elect Democrats to your legislature down there and elect a new Democratic governor and get rid of Rick Scott.
Also, in Florida, they don't let you – it's illegal to, to hand count paper ballots in Florida.
Which is crazy, because that's exactly what they needed in Bush v. Gore. Because you couldn't be...
We don't even know if our votes are being counted.
That's right. No, I mean, if you read the media consortium after Bush v. Gore, what's fascinating is that under any system of counting, any system where you're consistent, whether you count the dimpled chads or the one-corner chads or the two-corner chads, three-corner, any consistent way of counting the votes where the voter intent was crystal clear, Gore won that election. And that's why the United States Supreme Court could not let them count the votes, because they knew that if they did, in fact, Justice Scalia says very clearly in his December 9th, 2000 opinion, if we count the votes first and declare who won later, that will damage George Bush's claim to be president. At which point, as I said, as I quoted when I was reading about what's going on in Virginia, as Stalin said, those people who cast the votes don't decide elections. The people who count the votes do. So Joseph Stalin, the dictator of the Soviet Union, and Justice Antonin Scalia have a lot in common. Both of them want to ignore the voters and simply decide who should be the dictator or president of their country. So,
and also in 2006 when my Congressman Vern Buchanan won,
yeah,
he only won by like 500 votes, and there are all sorts of voting problems,
yep,
in Sarasota.
Well, you need to reclaim your state. Oh, Sarasota is a great example. Yeah, there were whole counties where they just decided not to count the votes, where massive numbers of people weren't counted. You probably have, I'm sorry to say, and I'm picking on my home state of Virginia today, but you probably have in Florida the single most corrupt state in the United States. And I don't know whether you need to have marches on Tallahassee or a stronger Occupy movement, but you do not have a representative government down there. And until you throw out all those Republicans in the legislature, you never will. So I hope you're working hard to do that in Florida.
Yeah, Sarasota's I live in Sarasota,
yeah,
and we're kind of a swing area, so hopefully we'll move way in the blue direction, and
hopefully
like,
so.
Even some Republicans are really mad at their elected officials here.
Well, I'll tell you, Victor, I hope you'll call in every Sunday, noon to 3. I want to hear from you. I really appreciate your listening down there in Florida. I'd like you to encourage other people in Florida to listen, because we're out of the nation's capital. We deal with national issues. So even though we're a D.C. radio station, we love our listeners all across the United States, and I really want to thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
We have progressive talk.
That's right. There's not enough of it, so keep listening. Thanks again for your call.
Bye.
That was great. Like I said, we have callers from all across the country, and I'm always glad to get a new caller. Victor was a new caller, and I hope you'll call in again, Victor. Let me go back. He's absolutely right about Florida, by the way. It really is one of the most corrupt states in the United States. I've been picking on my home state of Virginia, because ever since the Republicans took over there, they're trying to stop people from voting. You see, that's what they do. That's what the communists did in Russia. That's what the Nazis did in Germany. That's what the Republicans are doing in America. Once they get in power, they try to take away the right to vote. Because the only way to get rid of a party in a democracy is to vote them out. So Victor was talking about in Florida, right? In Sarasota, they just didn't count the votes. Bush v. Gore, they just didn't count the votes that would have in Florida would have made Gore over the top. That's what Stalin said to do. And now in Virginia, we have bills where they simply are saying, if you don't have ID, then you can't vote. Now, you might think that seems fair, but you may have an ID. You may not realize that particularly minority voters are 20% more likely to lack some state-issued photo. In fact, about 1 in 6 Americans do not have a photo ID. Now, if the United States were to go down to every American, every homeless person, spend $1 billion, and give everyone for free a voter ID, then I wouldn't have so much of a problem with it. But when Georgia started its provision to require a picture ID, they provided places all around Georgia except in Atlanta, a heavily black city. And they didn't exactly provide public transportation to the places where you're supposed to get the voter ID. The reason why Republicans want to make it harder to vote is very simple, because blacks and young people are more likely to vote for Democrats. So there's a provision in Virginia law that says that if you forget your identification, you can simply sign saying you are who you say you are, and then you can go ahead and vote. And it's actually very easy to commit to stop fraud, because if two people vote under the same name, that person would know if you took their voting place, right? You could be prosecuted if you lie. And most people aren't willing to go 5 years to jail to get one more vote for their candidate. In fact, there's never been any evidence of any voter fraud whatsoever in Virginia. But there's 17 separate bills that Republicans are trying to get through to prevent voting in Virginia. And I want to know why they think voting is so evil, so dangerous. One of my favorites, favorite being in a very ironic sense, is a Virginia bill that would have a 5-day waiting period for allowing a newly registered voter to receive an absentee ballot. A 5-day waiting period. These are the same Republicans that insist we shouldn't have a waiting period for guns. If you want to murder your wife, you should be able to go out, get the gun, and shoot her right away. No waiting period necessary. You gotta have that gun right away. You know, most people, if they have a hunting trip, they plan it in advance. But, you know, murder's hard to plan in advance. If you're really mad and you want to shoot somebody, you go out and get a gun in Virginia. They do not want you to have a waiting period. But to vote, now voting Republicans consider dangerous. Voting is something that could knock them out of power. So let everybody have guns without waiting. But voting, no, voting's way too scary. Let's stop that. They not only want to require government-issued photo identification and require proof of citizenship when registering. Proof of citizenship? What's proof of citizenship? How are you a citizen of the United States? You're either born or naturalized. Well, if you're naturalized, then you have, I guess, your naturalization certificate. I was born in the United States, right? Where's my proof of citizenship? It's not on my driver's license. I do have a passport, but only 1 in 5 Americans have a passport. Let's say I didn't have a passport. Can I bring in my birth certificate? Not good enough. You know why? It doesn't have my photo on it. And if it did have my photo on it, you know what? I look different from what I did as a baby. We don't have a national ID. All this does is it does its best to prevent people from voting. They want to post a list of penalties for voter fraud. I'm fine with that in several languages. You know what? You want to post a bill, something to prevent, that says don't lie to vote. That's the one thing I'm okay with. But a waiting period? Proof of citizenship? How the heck are we going to do all this? Why is it that Republicans are trying to suppress the right to vote? Because, let's face it, poor people are less likely to have a voter registration card or a photo ID than rich people. Homeless people are particularly unlikely to have this kind of thing. You know, I remember back when I lived in California and we had a homeless person come in and wanted to register to vote. We tried to figure out a way to register him. We called the registrar. We were put on hold for several hours. And finally, the homeless man left. He couldn't, you know, it was too much work to get him to vote. It should not be work to vote. It should be easy to vote. I'd be okay with requiring every American to vote. If you don't want to, in the voting booth, you can click none of the above. But make every American enter that voting booth. Voting is what makes our government legitimate. And to the extent that our government prohibits voting, it is, to that extent, illegitimate. This is Mark Levine. If you want to call in, it's 202-889-9792. 202-889-9792. You can also call toll-free 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this. Talking about sex, religion, money, and politics, the four things your mother told you never to bring up at dinner parties. I am bringing them all up because the intersection of them is so interesting. It comes up with the Catholic Church and the decision by President Obama that Catholic institutions have to allow their employees to have access to contraception. I have no problem with that. Remember, it does not affect the Catholic Church. I'll be very clear on that because Rick Santorum said that President Obama was declaring war on the Catholic Church. Churches can refuse priests and nuns and ministers and even the church secretary. Well, I guess there are no ministers in the Catholic Church. But even the church secretary can be refused contraceptive funding. Okay, it does not affect the actual churches. But church institutions that receive public funding, things like hospitals, Catholic Charities, and I have the Rick Perry trouble. There's three. There's hospitals, charities, and universities. Universities is the third one. all of them, which serve non-Catholics and hire non-Catholics and receive a huge amount of public funding, they've got to play by the public rules. See, where the money is coming from decides where the money goes. It's that simple. The government pays for something, they get to decide where the money goes. If you give money to Susan G. Komen, you get to decide where that goes to. And if you don't want Susan G. Komen to stop funding for Planned Parenthood, then don't give your money to Susan G. Komen. If you are a Catholic institution and you do not want your employees to have contraception, then don't take public funds. The money controls the message. And nowhere is that more true than in the Republican nomination right now, where Mitt Romney and pals from Wall Street are controlling his message. See, that's the problem with money in politics. Money controls. It's that simple. Whether it's the government money, whether it's money to a charity, or whether it's money to a super PAC. And there's a fascinating statistic I read recently. Half of all the money supporting the Romney campaign, whether it's campaign or super PAC, half of it is from people who gave more than $100,000. Half of the money going to President Obama's campaign is from people who gave $200 or less. That means that substantially greater number of people support President Obama than support Mitt Romney. I mean, all it takes to give $19 million, if you give a million each, is 19 people. And in fact, the people we know who've given to the Romney campaign, three gave a million each, and one guy gave $2 million. He officially affiliated with the Mormon Church, gave $2 million. And the other $3 million givers were related to Romney through private capital, through Bain Capital. So the question is, do we believe in one person, one vote, or do we believe in $1, one vote? Democrats believe in one person, one vote. They believe that we, the people, are in charge of our Constitution. We, and when I say we, the people, I mean human beings, don't mean corporations. That we, the people, everyone should have an equal vote in a democracy. The majority should win. Pretty controversial stuff. Republicans believe in $1, one vote. They believe that $1 million values a million times more than $1. And if you give $1 million to a campaign, you should have a million times more access than the person who gives $1 to a campaign. That's why they believe in lobbyists. That's why they believe in insider trading. That's why they have people like Spencer Backus, the Republican chair of the Financial Services Committee, very carefully steering earmarks into places that bring him back a lot of money, and trading on all that money as well. I believe money should be out of politics. Now, I realize some are going to consider that naive. In Washington, they say that money is the mother's milk of politics. But I don't believe that money should control politics at all. In Europe, they have public financing of campaigns. They tend to run about 3 to 6 weeks, and it comes from taxpayer dollars. And I know you're going to say, but wait a minute. It costs taxpayers money. I don't want taxpayer dollars going to political campaigns. That comes out of my pocket. You're right that it does. But I argue that it costs you more to have private funding of campaigns than public funding of campaigns. Let me explain why. If you publicly fund campaigns, you might have, $100 million. It's a lot of money. $100 million funded by the American taxpayer, or about 30 cents per American. Let's say it's $300 million. Let's say it's a buck per person. So $300 million goes to publicly fund campaigns. Heck, even $1 billion, $3 per person. I'm willing to pay that $3. And I'll tell you why. If we don't pay for public funding, then we have the current system. And under the current system, lobbyists get billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars, right? It works like this. You give $1 million to the Romney campaign, and then he cuts your taxes by $100 million. How do you think it is that Mitt Romney, a guy with $250 million, a very, very rich person, a quarter billionaire, why does he pay less than 14% in taxes? Why? Because he and his friends gave so much money to the government in millions that they got money back to the taxpayer in billions. You see, it's cheaper for us to fund our own elections. Because if we let the rich people fund our own elections, they will steal so much taxpayer money that in the long run, it ends up costing you more. When you legalize bribery, which is what we have in this country, legalize bribery, somebody pays $1 million and they get $1 billion back, that will cost a lot more money than spending $3 for public financing of campaigns. Now, I realize I'm a voice in the wilderness, but I don't think we're ever going to get rid of Washington corruption in either party, particularly in the Republican Party, but in either party. There are Democrats that take money too. Until we get money out of politics and give every candidate an equal chance to express their views, absolutely, a certain amount of public funding, but take out, if you take out the money funding the private interests, people like the Koch brothers, people like foreign countries that are funding our political candidates, then you won't have them under their control. You know, one of the interesting differences between Democrats and Republicans is Democrats, and I hope Obama continues to do this, tell you where their money's coming from. And I'm afraid he may stop because Obama's just agreed to the super PAC funding. I think he had to rather than unilaterally disarm. But he needs to keep telling Americans where his money is coming from. And he needs to point out that Romney refuses. And I guess as Santorum and Gingrich do as well, refuse to tell you where their money's coming from. It could be coming from Putin. It could be coming from China. It could be coming from Iran, for all we know. Most likely it's coming from the Koch brothers. The reason they won't disclose the money is because secret money is the most dangerous of all. It is not only legalized bribery, it's legalized bribery by shadowy, secret people and corporations that control our politicians with secret strings. About the only thing worse than having our politicians controlled with strings by corporations is having them controlled by secret strings that we can't even discover. And I know some are going to say, hey, but Democrats take money too. Here's the difference. Democrats support disclosure of these funds. Again, public financing is the best. But if you can't have that, at least disclose where the money's coming from. And I ask Republicans and people that support the current Republican system, why do they believe that secret money from shadowy interests should control our government? It's a simple question. If you believe that the Koch brothers and a few wealthy oil companies should control our government, then why not disclose it openly? Think about why the Koch brothers give 10 or 20 million or however much they give. We can't know because they won't tell us to Mitt Romney. Why? Because they know they'll get billions back in our taxpayer dollars. It's a good move for the Koch brothers. It's legalized bribery. It's a bad move for the American taxpayers. Carl from Buffalo, New York. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, Mark. Hey, the government pays the money. The government has control. So that means you obviously believe in drug testing for welfare recipients?
Well, you know, I don't. And I'll tell you why.
Well, how can you? Prove my point with what I say about every liberal, biggest hypocrites on the face of the earth.
Can I tell you why?
I'd love to hear your explanation.
Good. Will you stay on, or are you going to just say that and run?
No. I'm staying on because I got one more question for you.
Good. All right. Okay. It is far cheaper to provide the welfare without the drug testing than with the drug testing. Here's why. Drug testing welfare recipients, apparently some 2-3%, are on drugs. Okay, the drug test can cost as much as $200 a pop. So you're advocating taxing me 5 or 10 times the amount of the welfare to do this drug testing that affects so few of them. I don't want to pay the extra money. But you know what? If you want to pay more of your taxes and you want to solely pay for this drug funding, you and all your conservative friends will put a 2% surtax on you folks to pay for it, then I'm okay with it. But I don't want to pay extra for something that does very little good. Is that fair?
So, no, it is. But $16.5 trillion in debt, you're worried about $200. That's a little scary, too.
Per person. Per welfare recipient. Why? Let me ask you this. Why do you want to pay more money rather than less? Because you want to punish poor people? You really want to make them hurt? Is that why? Let me ask you about this.
Which you guys have none of.
Okay, let's talk the same principle. Hey, let me ask you this, Carl. We bailed out a whole number of bankers. Are you okay with drug testing them, too?
Absolutely.
Oh, you get drug testing too? Okay. Let me tell you something else. We give a massive tax cut to people who run hedge funds, like Mitt Romney. Are you okay with drug testing all them too? Because that's millions of dollars.
It's not as much because you know what they work.
It's millions of dollars.
They go to work.
No. I don't look. They're taking my money supposedly to provide jobs. How about we just drug test every American? Right?
I'd be fine with that.
You'd be fine with that?
I can live with that.
You know what? In order to make sure that Americans don't use drugs, why don't we just implant a chip in their body so we can follow them with the global positioning system and monitor their behavior and make sure they're all doing good?
With a guy like Obama in charge, it's just a matter of time.
Well, that's what you want, right?
I
thought you wanted less government interference in our lives.
I do.
Okay, so why?
On a level playing field, I'd say it's either everybody or nobody.
So you're okay. You're okay with drug testing everybody then? All right.
If it had to be. I
don't think it has to be. I think it's very expensive. You know, I'm okay with drug testing pilots, people who make a mistake and a plane can go down. I'm okay with drug testing. I guess a brain surgeon. But you know, it seems to me that we should see that there's actual a trouble there. You know, we should actually think that there's a reason to do that. But before just randomly drug testing, like said, you know, did you know that welfare recipients
qualify it somehow?
Carl, did you know that welfare recipients use drugs? Let me just ask this. I'll get you another question in a second. Just answer me this, Carl. Did you know that that welfare recipients use drugs on a far less basis than the average American? There it's about 2 to 3%, and the average American's about 6 or 7%. Did you know that?
Absolutely not. That's 100% a lie.
No, it's not.
I bet my life on it.
You're wrong. Well, I don't want to take your life, Carl, but you're dead wrong. You're dead wrong. Okay, ask me your second question.
Second question. Yeah. While I was on hold for the last segment, which lasted less than 3 minutes, I believe, you mentioned the Koch brothers 5 times.
Okay.
Besides the fact that they're not felons and that they are Americans...
Let's drug test them, too.
The difference between them and George Soros.
I don't believe that any wealthy individuals should control our politicians, period.
You forgot to mention George Soros, though, when you mentioned the Koch brothers 5 times.
Well, I am unaware that George Soros is spending any near the amount of money the Koch brothers are.
Well, the ones that do wrong on your side, you're not aware, but the Republicans that do wrong, you are aware.
No, but here's the difference.
I just wanted to make sure.
No, here's the difference. Carl, here's the difference. The Democrats disclose who funds them. Why won't the Republicans disclose who funds them? Are you for disclosure or are you against it?
I'm for disclosure.
Okay, so when the Republican Party is opposed to the Disclose Act, which is would at least temper Citizens United by letting people know where the money's coming from, you oppose the Republicans. You're willing to call your Republican representative and say, join with the Democrats and support disclosure of public funds. You're willing to do that?
Well, they should disclose. I think everybody should disclose.
All right.
I don't make up my mind based on whether a Republican says something.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that.
Because how I think and how I feel.
Fair enough, because I think your party's dead wrong in that. How about public financing of campaigns so that we don't have George Soros or the Koch brothers controlling our politicians? How do you feel about that?
I guess to a certain degree.
Okay, all right.
I don't think
that's pretty reasonable.
Long enough. Like you said in Europe, I don't think 3 to 6 weeks is long enough.
Well, fine. We can have a
way too long.
Fine, we can have a longer period of time. I don't think we need a full year.
Sure.
But if you want to do 3 to 6 months, I'll compromise with you. But to me, it's that the length of time isn't as important as the fact that I don't like that we have legalized bribery in this country. I don't want a liberal politician beholden to George Soros any more than I want a conservative politician beholden to the Koch brothers, because I'll tell you what happens. When politicians are beholden to moneyed interests, they end up giving my taxpayer dollars to those moneyed interests, and I know you don't like that either.
That's 100% I agree with you.
All right, 100%. So you see, we found some agreement there.
We agree on a lot of things, but we
just... Fair enough. Fair enough. Anything else? Or are you done?
I'm good.
All right.
Thanks for letting me talk. I'll call you soon.
Thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
When you point these things out, many Republicans are reasonable about it. But their party is not. Interesting poll the other day showed that many Republicans do not like their representative in Congress. Most Democrats are pretty much okay with theirs. And I think the reason is because if you look at the Republicans in Congress, they're not standing up for Republican principles. If you believe that we should not have legalized bribery, if you believe that we should not have insider trading, then ask yourself, why is it that the Senate, which passed a very strong bill, the Democratically-controlled Senate, passed a strong bipartisan bill to prohibit insider trading, which immediately the House Republicans watered down? Why is that? When the Democrats say, all right, we don't like money in politics, but if you got to have it, at least disclose where the money's coming from, the Republicans said, no, we can't tell you where our money's coming from. If you knew where our money came from, you wouldn't vote for us. You consider us corrupt. We can't possibly tell you. Why not? Why not? You know, they could still voluntarily tell us. Hey, Mitt Romney, Rick Santorum, Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich, where's your money coming from? We know Newt Gingrich gets $5 million from one person alone, a casino operator in Las Vegas. We know Mitt Romney got $5 million from four people, $2 million from a Mormon church buddy, and $1 million from his Wall Street buddies. But the rest, we don't know where it's coming from. And the answer is, if you have nothing to hide, why are you hiding it? Right? I mean, Mitt Romney wanted to hide his tax returns. He didn't want to disclose them. Why didn't he want to disclose them? Because he didn't want to let people know that he's paying far less a percentage of taxes than the ordinary Americans. But we pushed him, and he disclosed them, and now we find out he doesn't even pay 14%. He doesn't even pay the same rate as a single person making $9,000 a year pays 15% marginal tax rate. And here, Mitt Romney makes $9,000 an hour, and he won't even pay that rate.
So he had something to hide. I ask you, when you look at all the money being given to Republican campaigns, ask yourself why they won't disclose it. Ask yourself what they have to hide. Ask yourself if they're like Spencer Backus, the chairman of the Financial Services Committee, who is busy earmarking land to near where he owns property, or even worse, trading on stocks and options based on what he knows from inside information in Congress. Now, Democrats have done it too. I say get all this money out of politics, completely out. You want to be a politician, fine. Serve your country. Don't serve yourself. If not, then don't be a politician. Another thing we need to stop, the revolving door. Did you hear Jack Abramoff talk about, he's of course the guy that's put in prison for all of his influence peddling in Congress. He talked about one of the best ways to buy a member of Congress. I mean, sure, you can give him $1 million the way they bought off Mitt Romney. But there's an easier way. All you have to do is go to their staff and say, hey, we'd like to hire you at our lobbying organization when you're through working for that member of Congress. And now for the next 2 years, they own you. They own you. You working for that congressman, Jack Abramoff said it was easy. You just flip the strings and like a marionette, they do what you say because they know you're going to offer them a lucrative job when they're done. We've got to end the revolving door. I am proud to say, even though I've been offered some jobs, I am proud to say that since I worked as a congressional attorney, I have not worked for any lobbying organization. I have not been paid a penny for lobbying. I have done some lobbying about causes I agree with on my own because I agree or support those causes. I've gone and called members of Congress as a citizen. I've never been paid to lobby. And you know what? If you agree with a cause, call your member of Congress. You shouldn't need a professional lobbyist to see a member of Congress. And a member of Congress requires a professional lobbyist in order to talk to them. Then that is a corrupt member of Congress. You should be able to email your representative because they represent you. You should be able to call them, talk to them, meet them in person. And if they don't represent you, you need to vote them out and find someone who will represent you rather than the corporate interests. When we come back, I want to move on to foreign policy. I have a lot to say about Syria and Iran and may surprise you.
So just dial 202-889-9792 and we'll talk. 202-889-9792 or 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I want to thank Victor for calling in. He's also tweeted at me. I don't even know how to use the right terms. He tweeted. I'm a tweeter newbie, but I hope you also follow me at Mark Levine Talk the way Victor did. Victor says, it's funny how the GOP calls Democrats dictators, yet act like dictators themselves. If you follow me on Twitter and tweet at me, I will read your tweet on the air. We'll be right back when I move on to foreign policy right after this.
Specifically, sex, religion, money, and politics, the four things you're not supposed to talk about. And mostly been focusing thus far on, the decision in Catholic, President Obama on contraception and the Catholic Church and so forth. Susan G. Komen Foundation, money and politics. I want to move on and talk a little bit about foreign policy. And this may be something where some of you liberals out there may disagree with me. And heck, if you do, I'm okay with that. Call in. Let me know. Tell me that you disagree, and let's talk about why. I want to talk about foreign policy, because I'm very concerned by what I see in the Middle East. Now, those of you that know me know that I very much opposed our intervention in Iraq. I always have. I thought it was a bad idea. I didn't think that it made sense for us to go into a country and occupy it when the people themselves were... I'm no fan of Saddam Hussein, but the people themselves certainly were not revolting, and at least not at that time. And it was just there. We were there about oil. I mean, that's the reason why we were there. There was no other reason why we were there. It's different in Syria. It's different in Iran. I'm very concerned in both countries for different reasons. In Syria, you clearly have a government that is starting to massacre its citizens. You have the beginnings of a civil war. You have the beginnings of what happened in Libya. Frankly, I predicted this months ago. In Syria, you have a minority, small minority, about 10%, controlling the majority. The dictator, Bashar Assad, is of the Alawite sect, a Shiite sect, ruling over a majority Sunni Muslim country. And there'd be nothing wrong with that, except that he favors the Alawites, and he puts them in places in the army, and by doing so, he makes sure that they get all the benefits, while his people don't. There is no freedom of speech in Syria. There is no freedom to speak out, to advocate, to really to oppose the government. This is a long-standing dictatorship. And now it's getting worse. Hundreds and thousands are dying. And the people are fighting back, and they're starting to take some territory. And as soon as they take enough territory to be an organization that has a chance of winning, and I think they're getting there. I think the Free National Syrian Congress is getting close to being an organization that can free its country. And the Free Syrian Army, along with the Syrian National Council, working together, I think needs our help. Now, some of you will say, Mark, there you go. You are arguing for military intervention. You're a warmonger, and so forth. I am not advocating the United States go in and invade Syria. I'm certainly not, just as I didn't advocate us invading Iraq, just as I didn't advocate us invading Libya. But I did think we could help the Libyan people overthrow their government, and we did, and I supported that, and I'm very glad we did. I think it's good to be on the right side of history. Too often the United States of America supports dictators because they support U.S. national interests. And I say when you can be on the side of the people overthrowing their dictators, why not? It doesn't cost a lot of money in the long run to help a nation overthrow its dictators. Well, again, not occupying, not send troops. Those things are very expensive. But along with our NATO allies, I think something like a no-fly zone, something like what we did in Libya, is a good idea. For one thing, Syria is very important geostrategically. It's certainly in a very important place in the Middle East. It's a country that borders Turkey and Iraq and Israel. Frankly, Syria invaded Lebanon and changed it from a free country into a country that now harbors the terrorist group Hezbollah. So it also helps U.S. national interests. But it's not for oil, and that's not the only reason. The reason is that the people of Syria are fighting for their own freedom, and we can help them win. And I think when you ask yourself when you think U.S. intervention is a good idea, you find that both Republicans and Democrats divide. You have isolationist Republicans, people like Ron Paul. You have interventionist Republicans, people like the neoconservatives that invaded Iraq. You have isolationist Democrats, people who think that we should never use the military force abroad except, if we are attacked. And you have people like me, liberal interventionists, people who believe that Harry Truman was right when he said that when we help democracy around the world, we help democracy here at home. I very much respect Harry Truman and the Marshall Plan and in that case, helping Greece and Turkey avoid communism. I do believe in intervention, and maybe some of you could disagree with me, and that's fine. I don't think it has to be that expensive, and I don't think it has to be everywhere. Certainly, I support the freedom of the people of Tibet to have freedom there, but there's no way we can fight China. We certainly can't do that. So I'm not advocating that, even though I really fear for the people of Tibet. But in this case, when you have a government massacring thousands of citizens, it is my hope at long last, and I think this is a liberal hope, not a neoconservative hope. I think we have to reclaim the interventionist mantle, the internationalist mantle, that the neoconservatives damaged the brand when they invaded Iraq to get oil. But the idea that America is the hope of free peoples worldwide, that's not a bad idea. You know, when George Bush invaded Iraq, first, he secretly did it because of oil. He claimed it was about weapons of mass destruction. That turned out to be a lie. He claimed it was about connections to Al-Qaeda. That turned out to be a lie. And then he said, well, it's about helping free people around the world. except that the people were not trying to overthrow Saddam Hussein at that time. They actually were under George H.W. Bush, 92, but they weren't in 2002. The point is, just because George Bush said it as his third choice when backed up against the wall, and the first two things he said turned out to be proven lies, does not mean that we liberals have to say, oh, well, then it can't be right to help free peoples around the world. George Bush said it. I think liberals should support freedom around the world. I think if we can prevent massacres, if we can have a third world country welcome the United States, that's a good thing. The people in the Free Syrian Army are looking for help. They'll say they'll take help from anywhere. They'll take it from America. Heck, they'll even take it from Israel. If a Syrian will take help from Israel to overthrow its government, you know they're being massacred. They're looking for help from anywhere. It's time for us to get allies of people, not of governments. Dictators can rise and fall, but a people's alliance holds. The reason why Germany and Japan and France and the Netherlands and England and all these countries, they may disagree with us from time to time, but they are very much our allies, is we defended the people against their dictators in World War II. That even goes for Germany and Japan, countries we defeated, run by dictatorships. I don't think it would cost that much. It might take a few cruise missiles, but I think we should stand up on the side of freedom. And I know the liberal, they're the liberal isolationist argument. I know it well. We have real problems in the United States, and we do. We can't be the world's policeman. I actually think we can be a little bit the world's policeman, not to go in everywhere, but in order to say, if we have more free countries around the world, it helps America. America becomes stronger as a leader of the free world. And it shouldn't just go for Europe. When people are being massacred in Rwanda, we should have been there. When people are being massacred in Darfur, we should have been there. When people are being massacred in Cambodia, we could have stopped that. Just as we stopped the massacre in Bosnia. Just as we stopped the massacre in Libya. The reason, I got to say this, one of the reasons why America is so strong is not just because we have the strongest military on earth. We have goodwill from a lot of people around the globe who recognize, yeah, they may be upset by, you know, American cultural, attacks and McDonald's or Hollywood or all the other things that take over worldwide and impinge on a country's cultural autonomy. But I think most people around the world increasingly recognize the American people have goodwill and want to see freedom and justice and democracy worldwide. And I don't think that's a bad thing. And I think when the United States supports dictators, it goes against these American values. So when people are trying to overthrow their dictators, we can lead the world in helping. We can in helping improve that image of America. So many people in the Middle East hate us because we support these repressive dictatorships. How about supporting the people for a change? How about turning around America's image in the Middle East? Is that too much to ask? So when should the United States get involved in a foreign power? There are some on the left and on the right that say that we shouldn't get involved anytime, anywhere, for any reason. There are others who say we should get involved when national interests are involved, when we can get oil or other things out of the ground. I say if we can help at relative low cost, a people achieve democracy, they will end up supporting America. I think that this engenders goodwill around the world. And also it ensures anytime people are more free in this world, it ends up redounding to America's benefit. You could argue it's for markets. You could simply argue it's for American values. And I realize there are many Americans who say we had a ridiculous war in Iraq. Let's just take all our troops home. I supported our troops leaving Iraq. I support our troops leaving Afghanistan. I think that war has played out about as far as it's going to go. But for relatively low cost, we, in conjunction with allies, we shouldn't do this alone. We should do it in conjunction with the Arab League, in conjunction with NATO. Obviously, we can't do it. The United Nations can't do it because of China and Russia's veto. But yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to help the Syrian people in a limited way, the way we did in Libya. I think it's a good thing. I know many of you disagree, and I'm going to get to you right now.
Hello, this is Bob from Brooklyn.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Good.
Talk to me. You disagree with me?
If the United States gets involved militarily in Syria, it'll be the biggest mistake we ever made. Now, if you say going under there under the banner of NATO or the Arab League would just be a fig leaf, the whole world would know it's the United States primarily doing this. It would be a terrible thing for two reasons. One, Syria is an ally, an economic and a military ally of Russia. Now, as it is right now, Russia is being surrounded by American military bases. There is a right wing in Russia, and the Russian military, they're getting very angry at the administration in Russia for allowing themselves to be pushed around by the United States. We have bases in Iraq and Afghanistan and Eastern Europe, and they were talking about putting a missile defense in a Czech Republic. Russia's, even in Uzbekistan, Russians are being, they feel like they're being kicked around. There's going to be a right-wing militaristic reaction from Russia. They're not going to take it.
Let me say about Russia. I don't think that's going to happen. Russia didn't go out and defend Libya. You're right that Syria's an ally of Russia. But even Russia, their foreign minister, admits that they vetoed the UN action. But they admit that Assad can't keep killing his people. I don't think Russia is going to go in and defend this dictator because Russia cares about its image, too, around the world. And there's clearly right and wrong here. I mean, Assad is massacring his people. He has very few allies right now. If I truly believed, as you do, that Russia would get involved with force of arms, then yes, I would not advocate this action. Just like I said, I want a free Tibet, but I'm not going to go and fight China. But I don't think Russia has indicated to us that they're going to do this, and I don't think they would. So if you're telling me Russia tells us we're definitely going to send troops in, okay, then fine. Then I back down. But I don't think they're going to do it. And if they don't do it, I still think it's a good idea.
Yeah, but there's other things, too. If the United States invades another Muslim country, again, there's going to be...
Well, I don't want to invade. Wait, I want to be clear here. I'm not advocating troops on the ground. I'm advocating what happened in Libya. Let the people fight their own war, and we and NATO and the Arab League use air support to help them achieve their own goals. I don't want to invade Syria. I want to use air support as we did in Libya. That's what I'm advocating. I just want to be clear what I'm advocating. You can disagree with me, but I'm not advocating U.S. ground troops.
No, this is too dicey a situation. Look, even air power, it's still a military involvement. Keep in mind, the United States got itself involved in a civil war in Lebanon. This is a civil war in Libya. When Reagan was, this is a civil war in Syria. When Reagan got involved in a civil war in Lebanon, they did so much damage to this country. He sent a battleship over there, started shelling, indiscriminately shelling the Lebanese villages. God knows how many civilians were killed. And then people say, Jesus, the Muslims, they hate America. Of course they hate us. We're killing them. In Afghanistan, we're killing innocent people with those drone attacks. No more killing of civilians.
Here's the difference, Bob, and I respect where you're coming from. I think there's a huge difference in the Lebanese civil war and what's going on in Syria right now. In Lebanon, it truly was a civil war between religious populations, between Sunni and Shia and Christians, each having about one-third of the country, all fighting to get their... I mean, there was no way to win that one. In this case, it's the people against their dictator. It's far more similar to Egypt and Tunisia and Libya than it is the situation in Lebanon. And the Arab people themselves, the Syrian people themselves, the Arab League itself, I think they should have to ask for it. Don't get me wrong. If the Arab League doesn't support it, I don't want to go in. But I think the Arab League is coming close to. Remember, they sent monitors in to try to stop the killing, and they just went around and killed them around the monitors. So I'm not saying the United States should go in alone at all. But I think with the Arab League, with NATO, with air support, helping the people take back their own country, it's a limited action. It's the right way to fight these kinds of things, whereas Iraq was the wrong way.
Mark, in Bahrain, the people were protesting against their government. Certainly the United States over there is on the side of the government of Bahrain. But look,
that's true.
We got to keep something in mind, the geopolitical situation here. I'm positive the Russians are not going to stand for this. We have to keep in mind there is a strong, powerful element in Russia. There's a strong right wing, probably including the military. They are very angry right now with the Russian political leaders. They feel like we're really got them up against the wall here. They're not going to take being pushed around by one of their allies. There could be a severe reaction. Supposing there's a country that's an American ally. Now, you know, the Russians, we could go back to a Cold War where the Russians
say, we'll help the
country against America.
I respect your call. I appreciate it. Usually you and I are in agreement. But I'll tell you why I don't think Russia will send troops in or anything like that. Russia has its own Arab Spring going on. It has its own Green Revolution. It has its own people seeking to have freedom. They're marching in the streets. They want free elections. They don't want Putin to be their dictator. They've got their own internal problems right now. Supporting Assad would make them look very bad.
I just don't think they have the opportunity. Let me say this. I did get a tweet from Syrian Integrity. Thank you for tweeting at me. He writes, how do you think Assad will stop? Prayers, talks, this is mafia. Have you seen a serial, spelled S-Y-R-I-A-L, killer become consciousness? He points out that back in the time of Bosnia, that only when we did military action that Serbia stopped shelling Bosnia, and that every time the West emphasizes that no military action or intervention, Assad goes crazy. Didn't they learn from Bosnia? I agree with you. I completely agree with you. And I think that because George Bush intervened in Iraq wrongly, a country where the people were not rising up against their dictator, a country where he just wanted oil, he's kind of he's made it seem like liberals – he's made it seem like conservatives support intervention and liberals therefore shouldn't. The answer is it depends where. It depends where. I don't favor intervening in Tibet, even though I feel for the Tibetans because the Chinese are too powerful. But as with Libya, when we can stop the killing, when we can make a country, particularly in the Middle East, where we have a very bad rep, understand that we're on the side of the people, that only helps the United States of America. I'll tell you something. Libya – I just read this in the Washington Post yesterday. Libya is opening its first synagogue. It's had, of course, a Jewish population there for thousands of years. One Libyan Jew has come back. The synagogue's all damaged and destroyed, but they're actually reopening a synagogue in Libya, of all places. We can promote freedom around the world. In fact, that is exactly what the United States should do. I know I have a lot of you calling in, and I'm going to get to all of you at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, or 202-889-9792. This is We Act Radio, and we'll be right back.
Let his body and spirit for the waste away, and soon after that his mind.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine. If you want to find out more about me, by the way, whether you agree with me or disagree with me, just check out my website at marklevinetalk.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. I know I'm going into controversy here. I know that there are many liberals, while they agree with me on Obama and contraception and the Catholic Church, or on the Susan G. Komen Foundation, the other things I talked about earlier in this hour, you're going to disagree with me on foreign policy. And you know what? That's fine. We can agree to disagree, and we should talk about it. I think the United States has supported dictators for too long. And I think we should be on the side of the people whenever possible. And I think that we're going to have a United Nations General Assembly resolution that's about to be passed. Now, seems to me most of the time, whenever the UN General Assembly, that's the one that includes everybody, not the Security Council, every country in the world, usually when there's a vote, it's like 150-7, and it's against the United States. In this case, world opinion supports us. World opinion is on the side of the Syrian people. Arab opinion is on the side of the Syrian people. All across the world, except the leaders of Russia. Frankly, the people of Russia, I'm sure, are with the people of Syria. It's just the Russian leadership that's not. Here is a country that was an anti-American country. If we could help this country achieve some freedom and independence, won't some people be grateful? Is that too much to hope for? Is that too idealistic to hope for? I think there's a chance here. I really do. And I don't want to be behind the curve. I don't want France or England to lead the way. I want to lead the way with France and England and the Arab countries and Qatar and the people themselves. But I know many of you disagree. I'm going to get to all of you. Let me just say one last thing, though, before I do. In 1982 or 1981, Israel bombed the Osiris nuclear plant in Iraq that Saddam Hussein was building. And it's a good thing they did. In a few years ago, they bombed a nuclear plant that Syria was building. And I think we can see now why it's a good thing that they took out Syria's nuclear facility. Didn't kill anybody, but ended their nuclear arms race, and now, if there's going to be a civil war in Syria, and there already is, no one will have access to those nuclear weapons. I think that's good. There may be some chemical weapons they have access to. That's scary. Not near as scary as nuclear. I predict, and if you heard it here first, then fine, I'm willing to go out on a limb. I predict in the next 5 months, before Labor Day, Israel is going to bomb Iran's nuclear facilities. I support that, too. To be clear, Israel should do its best to avoid any civilian casualties. I think they'll be small. But I do not want the Iranian government to have nuclear weapons. President Obama has said he does not want the Iranian government to have nuclear weapons. I would prefer
You know, if America wants to do it, fine. But I'm actually just fine with Israel doing it. Either way, back when North Korea was developing nuclear weapons, I supported ending those too. You could just call me a warmonger. I don't like when dictatorships, particularly the kind that are aggressive dictatorships and want to destroy other countries, have nuclear weapons. I'm okay with democracies having them, not dictatorships. I think it's going to happen, and when it does happen, I hope that everyone stands down and simply lets it go the way we did with Syria and Iraq. I think the world is safer with one bomb of destroying nuclear facilities than Iran having those nuclear weapons. All right, lots of disagreement. I'm going to get to all of you. Let's go first to Ken. We tried to get you before in Hoffman Estates, Illinois. I think we lost you before. Are you there now, Ken?
Yeah, I had a bad connection, so okay. I hung up. Didn't want you guys to listen to static.
No, thanks for calling back.
From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, when you hear that word Tripoli, when the Marines sing about their
Libya
exploits.
Yeah, that's
Libya. It has to do with fighting Islam.
And No. Wait. Hold on. It was not doing
it. Let me finish.
All right, you finish. Because it wasn't about fighting Islam in Tripoli. It was the Barbary Pirates in 1804. I know my
history. Who were Islamic warriors.
We didn't fight them because they were Islamic. We fought them because they were pirates. That's why we fought them. It had nothing to do with their religion.
You can study history, and I'll be right on that one. Hey, listen, I agree with you. I called because I'm supporting what you're saying. The only problem is that Islamic countries are four generations away from being progressive, from being open-minded, free market ideas. There's a small minority that we need to support right now, but we're going to prop up nasty, horrifying governments that make dictators look like Saturday in the Park. That's the problem. To support democracy in an Islamic country means we're going to have jihadists running their congresses and their senates, and that's not a very good situation to think about for the next three or four generations. Means 120 years.
Well, I'm not sure what you're saying here because I can't quite tell where you are. I mean, I disagree with you on the Barbary Pirates. I don't think we fought them because they're Islamic. I think we fought them because they were pirates who were attacking American ships back in 1804 with the shores of Tripoli. But on the more recent question, are you saying that we shouldn't help the people of Syria overthrow Assad because they're all going to be jihadists? Is that what you're arguing?
We're between a rock and a hard place. I think we should just leave these countries alone. These people have been at war with each other for 5,000 years. Now we have Islam since the 600s to deal with, and it's a far worse situation to prop up these governments that are totalitarian. Islam is a totalitarian political system as well as a totalitarian religious system.
Well,
we need to remember.
I'm going to disagree with you here. There's Islam and then there's Islam, just like there's Christianity and there's Christianity. In Turkey.
Christianity hasn't been totalitarian for 700 years.
Crusades, Inquisition, is that 700 years? Maybe so.
The Inquisition was in Spain. It wasn't worldwide in Christendom.
And Islam isn't jihadist worldwide. That's exactly my point. You have a democracy in Indonesia that's an Islamic country that has a democracy. In Turkey, you have a functioning democracy. It's got some problems. I've got some issues in Turkey. But frankly,
no free exchange of ideas in either one of those countries. And you go there and try and set up a Buddhist colony or a Christian church in Indonesia and see what happens to you.
There are Christians who freely live. No, there are Christians who freely live in Indonesia. Absolutely.
Look,
I know what DME are. That's under Islamic law, but Indonesia isn't ruled by Islamic law. My point is there's all kinds of Muslims in this world. And to me, I would not make this a religious conflict. I don't think it's a religious conflict. We are helping the people overthrow their dictators. Some do, and some don't. And the vast majority of Muslims in this world just want to live in peace and not be hurt by a dictator or by anybody else. So
show me one of their Islamic countries where they're doing what you say.
I told you, Indonesia. And frankly, Turkey. Turkey is a pretty free country. It's not as free, I grant you, as France, but it's a lot freer than Mexico, which is on our border and is a Christian country. Well, I mean, there's less corruption in Turkey than there is in Mexico, and that's on our border, and it's a Catholic country. So the answer is there's all kinds of Muslims in this world, and I support helping the Syrian people, but it's got nothing to do with religion. I support them because I want them to overthrow their dictator, not for any religious battle.
I would just have to say that you have to watch. Well, I mean, the Muslim Brotherhoods are going to come, you know, the jihadists are going to set up in a democracy.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Well, we will see. I bet you that Tunisia, it may happen in Egypt. I hope it doesn't. But I'll tell you something. Tunisia, I think you're going to find that Tunisia is going to become a very successful revolution. It's going to become like Indonesia and like Turkey. You have an educated population there. They are not jihadists. You can have a democracy in majority Muslim countries. Turkey is the clearest example. So I think we need to support that. Wherever it is, and I think if we support dictators like in Egypt, we supported a dictator for so long, Mubarak, that when he was finally overthrown, now, yeah, there is some fear of jihadists and the Muslim Brotherhood. I think if we're on the side of the people from the beginning, we're less likely to have these radicals take control.
I think you're completely right. It's just that we are still 120 years away from generations of Muslim youths growing up to be like westernized youth. It's just not going to happen. For a century.
Well, I don't know how you predict a century. I've gone on a limb to predict what's going to happen in the next 5 months. I don't predict what's going to happen in the next 120 years. I think Tunisia is a classic example where we can see some peaceful Muslim democracy, and I want to see democracy all over the world, and I don't think it has anything to do with religion. Thanks for your call,
George
Ken.
Bush. Take care.
Thanks so much. I have to do a whole show on foreign policy. I brought this up in the last hour, and now I've got four callers and less than 10 minutes to get to all four of you and respond. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give each of you a full minute. I won't interrupt you. It's going to be hard. But I'll give each of you a full minute to make your points, and then I'm going to respond to all of you, and that way you can all get a word in edgewise. Sorry I can't give you more time. You got to call in earlier in the show to give me more time. We've got five callers. All right, you each get 1 minute. Doug in Aurora, Illinois, go. Doug?
Is that I very much agree with the previous caller. I think that we as liberals deal with religious issues here in our country, and we fight against problems with Catholics and evangelicals having to do with them telling us what we should be doing with our bodies and with civil rights. And I just, like the previous caller said, I don't see Iran or Iraq or Syria or even Turkey becoming, you know, a free-thinking country where a difference in religious ideals is a possibility. I mean, the two religious sects, the Muslim religious sects, are totally, totally against each other, and they believe that under their own God. I mean, they believe that they should be bombing each other and that the other one doesn't even have a right to exist.
Okay, thank you, Doug, for your call. I don't have much more time to handle. I will answer you when I get to each of these calls. I want to give everyone a quick 1 minute. Dominic in Chicago, go ahead.
Hey, I don't know, let's see, where to start, I guess, in such a short time. On the foreign policy with the wars and everything, I think we should just keep our nose out of everybody's business. I don't care what these other countries do anymore. I mean, unless somebody's being oppressed in a country, then I think we should send in units like we did with the president and try to, you know, let the people themselves overpower, like in Libya. I mean, if that happens in Syria or Egypt or whatever, then fine. Let's help them take the guy out and get out of there. Otherwise, keep our butts out of there. We don't belong in other countries, and I don't care what their religious problems are or anything else.
Thanks for your call, Dominic. I appreciate it. I just don't have a lot of time. I'm running out. I want to get to everyone, at least get a minute in. Nancy, I often agree with you, but I don't think I do here. Give me your minute. Go.
Yeah, hi, Mark.
Hey there.
I think, Bob, the earlier caller, is right about the fact that everywhere the U.S. has become involved in recent years, more and more people have died, including civilians and American soldiers. I'm sick of the U.S. always becoming involved in these foreign conflicts. And frankly, I think those at the top of the military-industrial complex have been promoting war ever since the end of World War II. And they have the mass media supporting war very often with the help of misinformation.
All right. All right. I will respond to you after I get to the last two callers. Terry in Elgin, Illinois. Go ahead.
Hi, Mark.
Hey there.
Yeah, I was just thinking about China, and so we should have some tariffs And then also there's some other more important things like Somalia. And I think, I feel like the USA stands behind a belief where we help people that are getting slaughtered. Say, would you please stop doing that?
So you support helping the people of Syria then?
I do, yes, sir.
Okay, all right. Got one call of support.
Thank you, Mr. President Barack Obama, for doing such a fine job.
Yeah, all right. Appreciate your call. Last caller, then I'm going to respond to each of you. Colin in North Dakota. I think it's my first call from North Dakota. Welcome, Colin, to the show. You get a minute, too. Go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to comment really quick, Mark, about a comment Bob made.
Yeah.
He was saying that people, that when we do airstrikes on foreign countries, that we kill a lot of civilians. Mm-hmm. Well, I just don't think we can compare that to what the dictators are doing now.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you, all five of you, for calling and for keeping your calls relatively short. You know I like to talk with you at length when I have time, but I've run out of time. So I want to respond to each of you. Let me respond first. I'll just do them in order. Respond to Doug. Talked about the fact that these religious people are fighting each other. If I felt, Doug, this were a religious civil war, as I mentioned, in Lebanon it was a religious civil war. Between Shia, Sunni, and Christian. In fact, the Iraq-Iranian war back in the 80s, I was against getting involved, and that was largely a religious war. I do not believe what's going on in Syria is a religious war. I realize that Assad, the dictator, is from a religious minority, the Alawite minority, the Shia minority. But really, this isn't about religion so much as it is about oppression. And I do think that there can be and will be and are Muslim democratic governments. Turkey is a, look, I actually don't like where Turkey's gone in the last 5 or 6 years, but it's a stable democracy, and it has been since the 40s. Indonesia, new Muslim democracy. I think Tunisia, you're going to see a lot of success there. I am not one that says that the Arab people, the Muslim people, can have a democracy. I certainly think they can. I don't think Syria is a religious war. That's where I disagree with you. If it were a religious war, I'd agree with you. I wouldn't want to be involved. I think this is simply oppression by dictators. And that goes to Dominic's point. Dominic said that he doesn't think we should get involved unless it's a matter of oppression. We should stay out of their business. I think it is oppression. So, Dominic, this is the exception to the rule. I think when you see thousands of people simply trying to march in the streets and to support free elections, and they're being massacred and mowed down, and you have even the Arab League, even people all around the globe, people who are not usually friends of the United States, saying they're being mowed down, that it's unfair, that it's wrong. I think this is oppression. I think this is the exception to the rule. Nancy, you raised some very good points. You're certainly right about the military-industrial complex liking wars. But I disagree with you that all these wars are a bad idea. I think it depends how you fight them. You know, Nancy, I was very much opposed to the Iraq War, to the occupation of Iraq. I'm also, by the way, believe that we should move our troops out of Afghanistan long ago, because I think the best way to fight Al-Qaeda, particularly now that we've removed the Taliban, is to, if there's a terrorist training camp, bomb the heck out of it, but we don't need to occupy the entire country. Frankly, there's probably more Al-Qaeda in Pakistan than there is in Afghanistan. So I support the drones. You may not, but I support the drones President Obama is using in Pakistan. I don't think we should have a military force there, and I don't think we should have a military force in Syria. I'm advocating to do in Syria what we did in Libya. No more, no less. All right? When the people themselves are trying to overthrow the government, which they clearly are, to join with Arab countries, to join with NATO, to use some air power to help the people themselves overthrow their dictator. We should be talking with them, figuring out how to help them, working with them. This is their war. This is not our war. So I don't believe in occupying Syria. Absolutely not. But I also think we have to see there's been some successes. And the two best successes of wars that I've seen fight in my lifetime were both done by Democratic presidents. And that's Obama in Libya and Clinton in Bosnia. In both cases, we used only air support. We did not send any troops on the ground, and we stopped genocide from going on. And I think we can do so here. So, Nancy, I'm wary of the military-industrial complex. I'll tell you, they want invasions more than air support because invasions cost a lot more money. But you know me, Nancy. You've heard me. You usually agree with me. I'm not out there to support the military-industrial complex. I'm out there because the Syrian people are clearly suffering, and they're miserable, and I want to do the right thing and have them on our side. I want to say to Terry, thank you, Terry and Colin, thank you for your support. I thought all of you would oppose me, but you didn't. Terry, you're absolutely right. America wants to stop people from being slaughtered, and we are. And Colin, you're also right that the United States tries really hard
to take out the bad guys without hitting civilians. We work very hard to get, and we should work hard to get them. And frankly, we'll lose popular support if we kill civilians. So we need to be very, very sure that we're killing the bad guys. And I think if you look at how Obama and Defense Secretary Leon Panetta fought the war in Libya, we did a very good job of going after the bad guys while killing very, very few civilians, almost none. In fact, I remember the Libyan government kept trying to show us civilians that were dead. They never could succeed in doing so. So we have to be careful. I'm not supporting all-out invasion. But at the end of the day, I think we liberals need to be on the right side of history. And knowing we're on the right side of the people rather than on the side of dictators, too often the United States supports dictators because they support American interests or oil interests or military or industrial interests. For once, it's clear that the people are revolting, and I want to be on their side. A member of the Syrian Free Army said recently that they would take help from anyone. They would take help from the devil. They would take help even from Israel if it would help them overthrow their government. These are people that are looking not for religious fights, not for geopolitical fights. They're simply looking for freedom, and I want to be there to help them. I appreciate it. I know the last thing was a little controversial, but heck, if you want to continue this discussion, go to my website. Go to marklevinetalk.com. Go to the Mark Levine fan page on Facebook. You can be my friend on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. Let me know what you're thinking. Let's continue this dialogue.